Area Voices tells the arts, culture, and history stories of northern Minnesota. Libraries, just like so many other public places, are tweaking their daily operations in these COVID times with limited hours, curbside pickup, and the Brainerd Public Library has moved its Brown Bag author series online so that people don't miss out on those unique experiences that you get when you're listening to an author talk about their work and their craft. Today at noon, the Brainerd Public Library is hosting Minnesota author Sheila O'Connor. O'Connor's written 6 novels, and she's received many awards for her work, including the Michigan Prize for Literary Fiction and the Minnesota Book Award. Her latest novel is called Evidence of V, a novel in fragments, facts, and fictions. And she's with me now on the phone.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Sheila, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today. I want to talk about your new book. We just set this up on Friday, so I have to be honest with listeners. I haven't read it, but I can't wait to read it.
Fine. I can fill you in.
Yeah, it seems fascinating. And it was inspired by your grandmother.
Yes, it was inspired actually by the this is an odd thing to say, but it was inspired by the absence of my maternal grandmother and what I did not know about her. I had never met my maternal grandmother and actually didn't know about her until I was about 17 years old. Didn't know that my mother was even adopted. And it took me quite a few years to, many, many years, decades, to find out things about my maternal grandmother. But one of the most significant things that I found out was by chance, by accessing some court documents that we had to get permission from the court to access, we learned that at 15, she had been incarcerated for being pregnant with my mother in 1935, and that it was a 6-year incarceration. I learned that in 2001, and it took me the decades that followed to give context to those facts, just the fact of here was a 15-year-old girl pregnant and sentenced for 6 years, and what did that mean? She was sentenced to the Minnesota Homeschool for Girls in Sauk Center, Minnesota, which was the girl equivalent to the Red Wing Reformatory for Boys, which exists still today. But I realized in delving into this that this was a history that people did not know about. And it's really interesting because the first thing when I had discovered that she had been incarcerated for 6 years, my first question, besides like being, quite distraught to find out that any 15-year-old is incarcerated till the age of 21. But what was her crime, And what I came to understand through this research of trying to, unearth things that have long been buried about these girls in this period at this school was that the majority of the girls, and I mean 95-some percent, maybe 97, maybe higher percent of the girls, were actually sentenced for immorality, which is obviously a vague and undefined crime, but not a crime at all, as a matter of fact. There were at least several hundred that were committed every year. So if we just do it by the decades, starting at 1911 when the school was founded, and then going through the 1930s for sure, which was her time, where they were still being admitted or committed is actually the word sentenced for immorality. I mean, that math alone is thousands.
So what?
But the school existed, operated until the 90s. Now, how they incarcerated the girls and what they incarcerated them for changed with time, and I don't have any doubt about that. Although many of these girls had been victims of sexual assault. My grandmother was pregnant with my mother. The father, the man who had impregnated her, was 35 years old. She was 15. She's the one who served the 6-year sentence.
Right.
And that often continues to be the case for girls even today that enter the criminal justice system. they maybe don't call them immoral, but they enter often first through being victims of sexual assault, sexual abuse.
What happened to your maternal grandmother? What was her life like after she left the home?
Well, first of all, the book only covers the time the girls were in the home, and then at 18, they were from 15 to 18 trained to be housekeepers, and then at 18, they were paroled to homes. What I knew was that she escaped parole at 18, because I found that in the school ledger when I was accessing these records. I don't know where she went. I don't know what happened in the years that followed. I mean, she went on to have a life, but her life, I think, was quite tragic in many ways. But the novel itself, the Evidence of V novel, I focused on this invented character of V that unfolds in the time of the school.
So it's fiction, but fact-based.
It's the book is made up of fictional pieces about this character of V, and it is made up with historical documents, archival documents that are quite fascinating, that actually were done, government documents from the time, reports from the school, newspaper reports, things like that, that tell the story of the school through the voices of the people that ran the school or represented the school in some way, or the government's voice on laws, illegitimate pregnancies, things like that. So the book works as a kind of collage. There's me actively imagining this story of this 15-year-old girl whom I will never know, and then piecing together the historical documents of the time period.
What was it like digging up all this information about history that kind of seemed buried?
Well, it was, for so long, it was just blank. You know, I mean, everywhere I turned, there was nothing about this school. There was nothing about this practice of incarcerating these girls there. And it felt like I was never going to find anything about her and about what had happened to consequently, my mother, who was born there. So part of my motivation was to understand my mother. But then I came upon this very old document that was created by an association called the Osborne Association out of New York that still works on behalf of criminal justice reform. And they, in 1937, had sent out a team of people to look at juvenile detention facilities across the United States and find out what was really going on in them. And one of the first places they came was the Minnesota Home School for Girls Suck Center. And when I uncovered that report, that was the first that I was able to really understand what had gone on there. And pieces from that report are in the book. So, you know, I knew when I was uncovering it and when I was working with this material, which is incredibly, you know, disturbing, but also illuminating about the history of women, girls across the United States and in Minnesota, I knew that there would be people for whom this history was necessary, you know, that they needed to know it. I mean, I think we all need to know it. We all need to understand the background of the criminal justice system and the treatment of girls. But I also knew that there would be family members, descendants of girls who were there like myself, and then actual survivors from the school that were still living that needed to see this story told.
What did your mom get to, is she around? Did she get to see the book?
She did not live to see the book released, but she just died actually this past fall, just weeks before the book was released. But she was alive in the time when I was doing the research for the book.
How was it for her to be learning about her own history?
I think it was very painful for her. I think it was painful to discover that she was born there, painful to discover that she had been breastfed for 3 months, that her mother had wanted to keep her and she had been taken from her mother. But I also think that it was important for her to understand her own origin story, you know, something that had been kept from her by law, because by law, all of these records are sealed for 100 years.
100 years?
100 years. So, I mean, we have my mother's, we don't have anybody else's. And when she learned that it would be 100 years, well, she knew she would be dead. And also very likely I might be dead by the time we could ever learn what had happened to her or the story of her beginning. So it was quite devastating to hit this wall of silence around this. So in part, the book has been an effort to break through the silence of both family secrets and government secrets.
What are you hearing from people? You've been out talking about the book. How are people responding?
Well, I immediately, as soon as articles appeared in the St. Paul Pioneer Press, the Star and Tribune, and various interviews happened, people came forward and started sending me emails, and every email said the same thing: I've never told anyone this story. And it was either about their mother, possibly their grandmother, or it was, I heard from women who were themselves incarcerated at Sauk Center. And then I also heard from people whose girls had been, girls in their family had been incarcerated elsewhere across the United States. And everybody came forward, and many people said they sobbed through the articles, they sobbed through the book, because it was sort of the first time this trauma that these girls had suffered, and their children, and then their children's children in many cases, the inheritance of this trauma was being brought to light. You couldn't name this trauma, you know. There was no naming things with my mother or things within our generation without knowing this ever happened.
What you... Your other books are, well, some of your books have been uniquely set up. This one is a combination of facts and data, and you've written a whole other book that's all letters.
Yes, it's true. It's true. My books are always something different. I'm interested in form, and I'm interested in narrative and the ways I can use different forms to tell a story. This story is in pieces because the story itself is in pieces. You know, it's a story that is put together like a puzzle. And as I'm putting together the puzzle, actively, the reader is actively piecing it together with me, yeah, realizing what the two of us will know and never know, which is true of my story and is true of so many people doing work around genealogy, you know, anything to do with missing family history, ancestors that they believe are sort of casting a shadow over their family, but they can't get to the information.
Wow. You know, I guess we hear stories about somebody in the family or a family friend who was sent away when they got,
yes,
pregnant, you know.
Well, it's interesting because there is the sent away to the girls' school, the home for unwed mothers, which was true in my time as well. I had friends that happened to. This is different because this was actually under the prison system. The girls were considered inmates. They're called inmates right in their records. So they were punished within the prison system. They weren't sent to homes for unwed mothers, and I'm not saying those girls weren't punished. They were, or they may have been. But this is a different kind of punishment. This is a punishment, a six-year punishment, or depending on the age that the girls entered. Oh, I should clarify that very few of the girls who went there were actually pregnant. The girls were sent from the age of 8 up to 21. It was a minority of them that would have been pregnant. The majority were what they called sexual delinquents or immoral or incorrigible, but they were not pregnant.
I'm talking with Sheila O'Connor. She's a Minnesota author. She'll be talking at the Brainerd Public Library's virtual Brown Bag Author Series today at noon. Today. When you write, are you writing every day?
I'm not writing every day right now, but when I am working on a novel, I write every day, yes.
If somebody has a unique story, say, a very rare perspective on life, you're a professor, you've been a professor. What advice do you give them for kind of getting it going?
Well, I think jumpstarting with a class can be a wonderful thing, even a small writing group, you know, forming a group of people. But classes can be community ed classes, you know, they don't need to be university classes. And sometimes a summer workshop, the first class I took was actually a week-long summer workshop up at Quadna in Hill City. And I took that, I think, in 1978 or 1979. And that was the first time I wrote fiction. And that kind of sent me on my way. So I think classes, beginning there, is a wonderful opportunity. And now, with COVID-19, there's so many classes that are available virtually. People that need to stay in their homes or aren't able to reach a class can participate.
Okay. Well, I'm really looking forward to reading this book. We're hearing and learning so much more, so many more of the stories about marginalized people. It's helping us sort of paint a picture of our history. And
I'm hoping that this book is filling in a history of punishing girls for crimes they didn't commit, which actually is still happening today. So
that is Sheila O'Connor. Her new book is called Evidence of V. Intriguing story. She's a Minnesota author. Area Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the Citizens of Minnesota. If you're interested in attending that virtual Brown Bag luncheon talk today, you can find out more information on the Brainerd Public Library's Facebook page. They will get you dialed in to how to attend that Brown Bag series.